proud to present Beer Radio that turns ordinary homebrew, into award-winning beer. The Jameel Show. And now, your hosts, Jameel Zainashef and John Plisse.
Good morning, my brewing brothers and sisters. Happy New Year! Yep, we're starting off 2007 with a bang.
Yeah,
American barley wine. Happy New Year!
Sorry. I waited a long, long time for that, dude. I missed you.
I missed you too, John. Yeah. It's been a while, and we're kicking off a great year of shows. If you go to www.thebrewingnetwork.com, go to the Jameel page, you'll see the list of the shows for 2007 that are coming up, and you'll see we got a nice full schedule. We're not taking any time off. We're getting them all done, and you can also download the 2006 shows. There's quite a bit there.
God. A whole nother year.
Oh yeah. God. So I wanted to kick this show off talking about something very dear and special to me, which is John.
Yes.
He has won the California Homebrewer of the Year, the Sierra Nevada Brewing Homebrewer of the Year Award, yeah. Which is difficult. It's three competitions, the May Fair, the California State Fair, and the California Homebrew Competition down in Stern Grove. And John whipped some butt in that and has won a very tricky award. Yeah. And he gets to go up to Sierra Nevada and brew with them for the day and hang out with them. And
I guess I should probably call him about that, huh?
Yeah, give him a call. They're real cool guys. Okay. They'll be like, yeah, whenever. You know, you just kind of tell them when and they'll come up, unless there's something really bizarre happening. Or if they're out of town, one of the guys is out of town that you want to see.
Nice. Well, it was a lot of brewing. I brewed a lot of beer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Brewed a lot of good beer, obviously.
Yeah. 2.5 years worth of brewing to prep for this.
Takes a lot of work.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I did it a couple times, and that's a lot of freaking work.
And I'm very, very good friends with my counter pressure bottle filler.
Exactly. Yeah. You know what I'm talking about. Yeah. So congratulations,
Thank
Sean.
You.
I'm very proud of you. I think you put in a lot of hard work, and it clearly shows.
And I'm done.
That's pretty much my feeling after I achieved similar things.
A lot of attaboy, fitty G's, and way to go, chicken boys.
Sweet.
For you.
And the chicken boy comes through.
I'll give him a bok bok.
All right. One of the other things I wanted to cover is over the past couple of weeks, there's Linda Stark is suffering from a terrible form of lung cancer, and the Brewing Network has been holding drawings and contests and stuff, and generating a lot of donations to give directly to Linda. And we took part in that, and we were donating a 6-pack of beer to anybody over $10 donation, and a brew session where you can come out to my house, and I'll provide the ingredients, and we'll brew some beer. For anybody who donated over $50.
Sweet.
So we're going to do the drawing for that on the show. We actually get to do something on the show.
We get to draw something.
Other than talk about beer.
Cool.
So, John, you want to pick one from each bowl?
Okay.
I was going to do it, but then I looked at the names, and I thought, oh, yeah, this person seems like somebody I'd have over at my house or somebody who wasn't. So the winner for the brew session is?
Damian Carini.
Okay, Damian.
Well done, Damian.
Email me, Damian.
There you go.
For the 6-pack of beer?
Six-pack of beer.
We'll email him also to make
and
sure.
And we'll email him also, and somehow they'll let me know what's happening.
Uh-oh. Ross Lanalo.
Ross Lanalo.
Lanalo.
Is the winner of the 6-pack of beer.
He's the winner of the 6-pack.
So somebody will give me his shipping information, and I will get that beer out.
There you go. How is her health doing, do you know?
Not so great.
Oh.
She had 2 treatments in Germany, and they're holding off on doing a third. And this is what she needed the money for. It's $15,000 a treatment. Insurance does not cover it.
Wow.
They had pretty much exhausted all the options in the U.S. So now they've gotten to a point where they're doing some other really radical experimental thing on her.
Wow.
But she's just a really sweet person who's helped a lot of brewers, professional and amateur. And if we can do something just to kind of help out, make this experience a little less horrible, would be nice. A lot of us have had loved ones die from cancer, so
and like it's five.
Nice to know.
Fab Five passed away. It's pretty hardcore.
Yeah, really, really sucks.
Well, we love you, Linda.
Hang in there. All right, so now for my complaint of the week.
On to more petty things.
On to more petty things. In my world,
yeah,
I am being troubled by a lot of requests for recipes for future shows.
Mm-hmm.
Now, all the recipes for the existing shows, if you go to thebrewingnetwork.com, scroll down to the bottom of the list of shows, there's a link. It'll take you to a page, has all the recipes in ProMash format and HTML and text, and Fred Bonjour has done a great job in getting those organized for us. And you get all those recipes. But, you know, don't look at the list of shows and say, oh, yeah, I really don't want to wait for, you know, September to find out this recipe and, you know, email, hey, send me this recipe, send me that recipe. Time was I could have done that, but I've doing so many things. I'm getting so many requests in right now. I'm going to have to hold off on that.
Well,
so I'm sorry, but you're going to have to wait for the upcoming show.
I got a great idea.
Yes.
Buy a book.
Yes.
Go to
I buy a book?
No. Whoever's emailing you, buy a book.
Uh-huh.
You know,
uh-huh.
Go to a homebrew shop.
Uh-huh.
Talk to them.
Uh-huh.
They have recipes. They'll
uh-huh.
give them out to you.
Uh-huh.
You know, or go to bjcp.org, print out the whole guidelines, and use your imagination.
Right. Well, and I think the interesting point of this is there are a lot of great recipes out there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the recipes that we come up with are very good. They're excellent. But there's also a lot of other excellent recipes out there.
Like mine.
Know, you know, like your recipes, Joe Formanek, you know.
Ray Daniels.
Yeah, and I'm leaving out a ton of people.
Yeah.
But, you know, Mike McDowell, a lot of people with a lot of great recipes. Try one of those. If you need a recipe right away, give one of those a shot and see what that comes out. And then when the show comes up, you know, brew that and see, you know, have some comparison. And, you know, you'll learn a lot from that as well.
Mm-hmm.
So really sorry to have to do that, but if I do all the recipe stuff, then I have to not answer some of the questions, the brewing related questions,
which are more important, of course.
Yeah, that's harder sometimes. It depends what the question is. Sometimes it's harder to get that information, which is
well, you're already more than generous enough to even give out your recipes.
Yeah, I don't mind, but so I feel kind of bad about it. But I gotta ask that people don't request future recipes.
Right.
You know, let's just stick with the schedule, and that's about as fast as I can get them out there, I think, because I have to, you know, reformat them and everything.
Well, we have a whole another 2 years to go, so.
Yeah, we'll get them all out there. Eventually, you'll have them all for free. Won't cost you a thing, except maybe some internet connection.
So I'm ready for 2007, are you?
I am.
Yeah, I'm feeling
and,
good.
You know, we are kicking off with American Barley Wine, which is one of the big, bold American styles of beer. And if you're in the San Francisco area around February 17th, they're doing the Barley Wine Festival.
Which you have
which
to
is a really pretty incredible thing. At the Toronado in San Francisco, it's on Haight Street, and right across the street, the judging's happening. I'll be down there for the judging. A lot of other guys will be out there. People come from all over the country for this thing. And they have this incredible, you can taste the winners at the Toronado across the street. And they have just tons of barley wines and a lot of other great beers.
Mm.
And you'll meet tons of
Beer connoisseurs,
yeah. And homebrewers, and judges, and all sorts of people you might have heard of.
But you need to tell them a little bit more detail, though. You're drinking barley wine at, what, 9 a.m. in the morning?
Yes.
Yeah, and get there early on the first day, right?
Right, you get there early. And there's not just this. There's parties. There's, you know, the anchor party. There's the celebrator party. There's, you know, going around all these different, you know, pubs with people you'll meet there. It is an incredible time. The Strong Ale Month or something is also going on at that time where certain pubs in San Francisco have this Strong Ale thing going on, and you go take a tour, and you know, 21st Amendment's in on this. You drink like these 10 strong beers, and you get like a special tattoo on your forehead or something.
Wow. Of a watermelon.
Of a watermelon. Yes. A strong watermelon.
So take Muni or get a DD, you know?
Yeah, and it's
a
blast. And the whole crowds are going from one location to another, so you can just kind of tag along. It's just incredible. So if you're out there, it's around February 17th that weekend, is the Barley Wine Festival. And if you get a chance, you can come out and really taste some incredible barley wines. So we're talking about American Barley Wine. Tell us about American Barley Wine, John.
Well, it depends who brews it. It's one. But American barley wine should have a lot more hops than an English style. The visually, it should be copper and dark amber in color. Darker than an IPA, though. I mean, there's people kind of screw up a double IPA versus a barley wine. You got to make sure it's very, very malty, rich in malt aroma.
That's a good point. You know, the double IPA isn't that malty.
It's drier.
Right.
So barley wine should be just all malt, you know. And you add so much hops to a barley wine anyways to balance out the sweetness. In a more American barley wine, you want a lot of hops and a lot of malt. I mean, I don't. Can you even really overdo a hop addition in a barley wine? I don't know if you could.
Yeah, I think it is possible.
Okay.
That's actually in my notes, right?
What else?
You can overhop a barley wine I have right there.
You can. See? We'll get to that later. See, we're connected.
There we are.
Other than that, it's just a lot of malt and a lot of hops, you know? Common problem I found with homebrewers is there's usually an imbalance. It's either too malty or too cloyingly sweet, or it's overly hopped and too dry. So the trick is getting a balance between the two.
Right.
And ferment it well. Strong yeast, 4 to 6 weeks, I was seeing the primary, don't have any diacetyl.
So probably the more common problem is that they're too sweet.
Most
they're not pitching enough way too sweet. Yeah, they're not pitching enough, or LaGrainville has too much crap in it.
Like, was it like a Crystal 15, like too much or something?
Yeah, way too much. People overdo all the specialty malts. They end up with, you know, they're throwing in the kitchen sink type of thing, kitchen sink beer. So I see this a lot on the style of beer. And when you're going with a smaller beer, you know, you can add a lot more specialty malts because it doesn't become as cloying. When you have a bigger beer like this and you add a lot of specialty malts, you can end up with quite a cloying sensation, and it just becomes overwhelming. So you have to use some restraint in the malts. It's a lot maltier and sweeter and bigger than a double IPA. I think that's an excellent comparison that you brought up. You know, where those you actually you need them a little drier. Otherwise, they become overwhelming. You know, and this is a sipping beer. This is a high alcohol.
Yeah, you're not drinking 16 ounces. I hope not. But
right. Yeah, this is you know, the thing you might see like Anchor's Old Foghorn. They have them in the little 7 or 8 ounce bottles, the nip bottles they call them.
These are a great winter warmer beer too. I mean, especially now. So.
Right. Yeah. This will, you know, be something where you can, you know, sit by the fire, have a little glass of it, and, you know, that's plenty.
Yeah.
All right, when we get back, we're going to get into the actual grains that you'd use and the yeast and the fermentation, that whole thing. Be right back.
Did you know that not only can you order from More Beer online at morebeer.com and receive free shipping on most orders over $59, but you can also shop in person at their two retail locations located in Concord and Riverside, California. In fact, the Concord facility has grown to over 15,000 square feet to fit all the new products, expanded showroom, and new Knowledge Center classroom. And now, in conjunction with the Brewing Network, More Beer is making it easier than ever to keep up on what's happening. Look for the all-new More Beer Monthly podcast at morebeer.com later in January. You'll learn about More Beer's history, sales and discounts on More Beer products, get to know team members, and hear coupon codes during the podcast to save you money. So go to morebeer.com or call 800-600-0033. That's 800-600-0033. And don't forget to check in later this month for the new More Beer Monthly podcast, a production of the Brewing Network. This is the Jameel Show.
All right, we're back. We're talking about American barley wine.
Big barley wines.
Big and flavorful.
Yes.
And one of the tricks to making a good barley wine is you want a malt backbone that's going to carry those hops, that's going to carry that alcohol. But you don't want it to end up cloying and sweet. You want some sweetness, but you don't want it cloying. You want it, you know, over the top. And one of the tricks, and I think this is mentioned in the barley wine style book even, from the Brewers Association, is to use an English pale ale malt.
Like and crisp Maris Otter?
Yeah, crisp Maris Otter, malt that you and I use all the time. Hmm. And use that as your base. And what that can give you is a nice, toasty, biscuity undertone that will help carry the whole thing, but not be cloying. Hmm. So it's a nice underpinning. You can use an American pale malt.
That'd be a little drier.
It's going to be a little less of that malt backbone. Mm-hmm. And you really have trouble making it up in the specialty malts when you're adding that much malt. You can do it, but I prefer to go with the English pale malt. Hmm. So for a 6-gallon U.S. batch or 23 liters, I'm shooting for an anticipated gravity of 1.115.
Oh,
big beer.
Say that again.
1.115.
Wow, we have a winner.
27 Plato.
Damn.
Big old bad boy. Now, you don't necessarily have to go quite that big, but...
So you had like 5 mash tuns or something?
No, all this fits in my mash tun, no problem.
Filled up to the top?
Yeah, it's just 25.5 pounds of grain. Yeah, it's nothing. and you're going to boil this for 120 minutes. We're going to get a little caramelization for that.
Oh, 2 hours, huh?
Yeah. You can go 90 minutes, but I wouldn't go less than 90. You're going to boil, you're going to have 22 pounds of the pale ale malt, or about 10 kilos. You're going to have a pound of Crystal 75, or 0.45 kilo. A pound of Crystal 20, 0.45 kilo. A quarter pound of Special B, which is 0.11 of a kilo. And a quarter pound of pale chocolate, which is, again, 0.11 of a kilo. And then a pound of corn sugar or table sugar. Either is fine. It's about 0.45 kilo.
So that'll bump your gravity up, but gravity, highly fermentable.
Highly fermentable, exactly. Yeah. And it'll help keep it from being too cloying.
Mm-hmm.
And you might even, that's only about 4% sugar in this.
Mm-hmm.
You can go up to 10% sugar easy.
Wow.
Without a problem. So if you want yours to be a little drier and a little less intense, you can add a little more sugar.
I'm surprised
of the malt
that you use that much specialty grains. Like you would think you would just
amount.
Use just Maris Otter all the way through.
You can do that.
Okay.
And make a more pale version.
Okay.
And the other thing you can do is, you know, you take that Crystal 75 out and you can remove it completely and go with the others.
Hmm.
Or you could replace it with like a Victory or a Special Roast or something like that, optionally.
So how? What's the color of your barley wine like?
This is SRM is going to be around 18 to 19.
Okay,
so it's a fairly dark dark beer.
Wow,
and this is more along the lines of those, you know, intense American barley wines. Now, mash temperature on this, you're going for 149, and you want to mash it for at least an hour. You may want to go hour and a half. Just to get is a nice fermentable word out of this.
In a very low temp because?
149, 65 degrees C. You want this thing to be fermentable.
Right.
The biggest mistake homebrewers make is a big cloying sweet beer.
Mm-hmm.
We were talking about that earlier. And it just makes for a less drinkable barley wine. You got to have, you know, this thing ferment out. I think the specialty malts that we're including in this is probably about the limit as far as the number of specialty malts I would use and the amounts. So I wouldn't go more than this. You can actually back off of this and still be okay, but I wouldn't go much more than this. I think it ends up being too much. And in any beer, you want balance, and that's what makes them drinkable.
Mm. So you probably do a 2-hour sparge? Because you have so much, or an hour and a half sparge?
Yeah, it still takes me, probably about an hour, 15, hour and a half. Yeah.
Wow.
Takes a little longer in something this big.
Hmm.
So, the one thing is, if you're adding any dark roasted malts, you're going to need to show restraint on that. In this case, we're using, 1% of a pale chocolate, which is 200 Lovibond in color. You know, just a touch, just to add a little roast, which adds a little dryness to it, and add a little color to it and a little character along those lines. Don't go over, you know, 2 or 3% mm-hmm. of any dark roasted. It becomes too much.
Be too dark too, huh?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty hard to get too dark in a barley wine.
Okay.
But, you know, it just the flavor turns out wrong, I think. It turns out more like an imperial stout.
Right.
Or starts to get along those lines, or an American stout. As far as hops go, I like to use a high alpha, clean bittering hop, something like Magnum or Horizon for the majority of your bittering. In this case, I have, for this recipe, I have 2 ounces of Magnum at 15.5% alpha acid.
It's a fair amount.
Or 57 grams.
Wow.
For 60 minutes. And that'll give you, according to the Rager formula, 96 IBUs.
Wow. Well, with that much malt for a 5-gallon batch,
right.
You need that.
Right.
Right.
But
uh-oh.
What you need to plan on is that some of your IBUs are going to drop. Aging is a big part of barley wines.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to start out with, it needs to be more bitter than you need when you first, after you first ferment it and you taste it, it still needs to be quite bitter.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to say, wow, it's too bitter.
Mm-hmm.
And after you've let it age for a year, then the bittering is dropped out. Quite a bit of the bittering will drop, and it'll be, you know, balanced just right. If it's not bitter enough to start with, if you taste it right after you fermented it, and it's like, wow, that's sweet.
It's not a good sign.
It's just going to get sweeter.
Right.
You know, unless you've got stuff in there still fermenting.
Well, all beer becomes maltier in time.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. As the hop acids drop out, the bittering drops out, and some of the malt flavors and alcohols and stuff oxidize and get that kind of sherry character to
mm-hmm.
them.
Mm.
It's going to take on a lot more sweetness, like you say. So that's at 60 minutes, a 2-ounce addition of Magnum. You can use Horizon, any high alpha, clean, bittering hop. At flame out, I use 1 ounce of Chinook, 1.5 ounces of Centennial, and 1.5 ounces of Amarillo. Pick your three favorite, you know.
But you're getting, like, aromatics like no other.
Yeah, citrusy, floral aromatic,
wow.
You know, which is very common for an American barley wine. You can use something else, but these really, you know, scream America hops, you know. Something mm-hmm. Graham may not be able to appreciate because of his limited ability to taste fine hops.
Hops, right.
But, you know, we in America can appreciate it.
We
so,
appreciate worldwide brewing, right?
Exactly. Right. We're open to, you know, hops and ingredients from all over the world,
right?
And that includes the beautiful Yakima Valley
there you go.
In the United States and other places where the hops are grown.
Right.
So 57 grams of the Magnum, 28 grams of Chinook, 43 grams of Centennial, and 43 grams of Amarillo at the knockout.
Chinook have what's the alpha acid on those?
13%.
Wow. So you're adding.
So all these are double digit percentages.
Wow.
And since they're right at flame out, if you're doing it like a Whirlpool immersion chiller, you'll trap a lot of the flavor and aroma, and you won't get very much bitterness from it.
So are you throwing these in when you're doing your Whirlpool?
Yeah, right before I, you know, the Whirlpool would be running.
Okay.
Right before I shut off the flame.
Yeah.
And turn on the water, I'll toss these in, then I'll turn on the water and shut off the flame and put the lid on.
Okay.
And I'll draw that down real quick, and it'll trap quite a bit of flavor aroma. And again,
put the lid on?
I put the lid on.
Okay.
And the age that the barley wine needs to achieve in order for all the flavors to kind of meld and for things to come around, for the alcohol to mellow out and things like that, takes time. It takes some aging. You're not going to be drinking this for 6 months or a year.
Wow.
This is something to bottle. And if you can, make as big a batch as you can, because this will age for a good 3, 4, 5 years. If your process is clean, 5 years from now you can be enjoying this and it'll be just quite the incredible beer.
Yeah.
You know, in a year it'll be really good, 2 years it'll be better, 3 years I bet you it's at its peak, you know, 4 or 5 will be pretty good too. So you want to brew enough that it's great. Don't drink it too early. And it really ages well.
Do you think when a barley wine ages and there's some oxidation that occurs, like around year 2 or 3, that might contribute to some flavors that you want in a barley wine?
Yes. I think, you know, there's some micro oxidation that will happen, even the best controlled circumstances. Mm-hmm. And you want some of that. You want, I wouldn't intentionally introduce any oxygen, but the alcohols and the ester, the alcohols become esters, and the some of the other compounds in there, the sugars will oxidize. You get some sherry notes from the alcohols and the sugars, and some of the malt flavors will change. Mm-hmm. The hop aromas and flavors will subdue a bit, and the IBUs will drop a bit, and all these things will take place over time. But that, yeah, that aging and those characters really give it a little bit of a wine-like character.
Right.
And, you know, it's... the sherry or wine-like characters really add to the overall perception. And the finest examples, you're going to find some of that.
And then that's desirable to be to style, to have that, you think, if you were to submit this to a competition or just for your own personal consumption? Would you wait for that?
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. The best barley wines are the ones that have some age on them.
Mm.
When they're too young, if you want a barley wine you can drink when it's young, you need to make it much smaller.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to have that thing, you know, you're looking in the maybe 1070s, 1080 range with lower alcohol. You go with something like an English barley wine.
Mm.
Those can be consumed fairly early. Mm. But all of the bigger beers really do. Real big beers tend to improve with age, I think.
What about your yeast strain? What type of yeast do you use?
On this, good old Cal Ale or 1056.
It's clean.
Clean, and it attenuates well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it has the power to drive the sugars down. You can use just about any yeast will get you to 15% alcohol. And that's way more than what the alcohol you'll have in this beer.
Where'd yours finish at from the 1.12, whatever you're at?
You know, you'll get down into the 20s, around 30.
Wow.
And the thing about this is any of these yeasts will get you down there to that, will go to that percentage of alcohol. You don't have to worry about, don't use champagne yeast.
Hmm.
Don't use wine yeast. Don't use any of those yeasts. You don't need them. What you need is the proper amount of clean, healthy ale yeast. And to get the best beer flavor, you're going to use a beer yeast, not a champagne yeast. It's the wrong flavors. It's going to dry it out too much. You just need to make sure you have healthy yeast. The problem a lot of times is people will brew a bunch of different beers, and they will repitch that yeast multiple times, but they've gone from some low alcohol beer to, you know, a pale ale, and then they've done an IPA, and then they've done a double IPA, and they're putting all this these hop acids are coating the yeast, and they're stressed from the alcohol in mm-hmm. the beer. Anything over 5% is really harmful to the yeast.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going to make a barley wine and you want to repitch the yeast, which is a good idea,
right?
You need to take the yeast from a smaller batch, not a Russian batch. Imperial Stout right. at 1090 or a double IPA at 1080 something. You want to take it from your average pale ale at 1050 something.
So you're just getting those guys prepped for the big time.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, make yourself 10 gallons. If 5 gallons isn't producing enough yeast for you, make yourself 10 gallons of pale ale or, brown ale or whatever, something around the 1050 range, and then use that yeast. And make sure that when you treat that yeast before, when it goes in that pale ale, that it's got plenty of oxygen, it's got the appropriate nutrients, that you're treating it right.
Mm-hmm.
And before you pitch it into the barley wine, wake it up in a starter, give it plenty of oxygen, let that yeast get healthy, get kicking, and then, add it in there.
Would you use the whole cake on the bottom of your carboy? Could you do that, or would you do secondary yeast? Or?
Yeah, you want to use the appropriate amount.
Oh, right, because you don't overpitch.
But, from a 1050-some-odd beer, it's pretty much usually just about the whole cake.
Wow, okay.
To a beer this big.
Okay.
Because this is double the gravity.
Right.
So, you get pretty close to needing the whole thing. Mm-hmm. You don't want to do too much because you'll lose some of your character of the beer.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to do too little either. Mm-hmm. I'd rather go too much than too little on this kind of beer. Because again, what's the most common problem that, people are having?
Underpitching.
Yeah, and too sweet a beer, and you won't get enough attention.
Your calculator is great, by the way.
Why, thank you.
I use it. It's awesome.
MrMalty.com.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a free pitching rate calculator you can find there.
Mm.
All right, so you can overhop a barley wine.
You can.
Although this is
like you maxed out the IBUs on that one.
Yeah, this is believe it or not, this is not overdoing it in something this big.
Explain. Yeah.
This is to the limits on specialty grains, hops, things like that. I wouldn't go much more than this on any of those counts. This is you know, I wanted to present, you know, about the biggest around that you could do. And anything else you're going to do, you probably want to back off of these.
Yeah.
But this will make quite a beer, and you know, give it a shot along these lines. But you know, you can't just throw in an unlimited amount of hops.
Right.
And you almost can on a double IPA, Imperial IPA. The reason being, you're using a far less malt character in there,
mm-hmm.
and you can allow the hops to become almost cloying.
Mm-hmm.
If you end up with cloying hops and cloying malt, you know, you don't want it cloying, but
yeah.
you know that character.
Yeah.
And you add those together, and it's just way too much.
Yeah.
And it becomes almost undrinkable.
Balance.
Yeah. And you need to show some restraint here
right.
and there. So this is pushing the restraint envelope because
you're living on the edge, Jamil.
Well, I thought people would be disappointed if we didn't have a really big American barley wine.
When's the last time you brewed this?
This is a couple years ago.
Nice. You still have it?
Yeah. I still have it.
Can I have some?
Maybe.
Okay.
Maybe.
How we doing?
Okay.
Good?
Let's take a short break.
Yeah.
And then when we get back, we will get into aging and, you know, how to handle this and fermentation. And
how to drink it.
And how to drink it. Right.
Now, back to the Jamil Show.
I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't.
All right, we're back. We're talking about American barley wine for our first show of 2007. And one thing I want to mention about the high alpha hops, one of the reasons you want to use a high alpha hop is that if you don't, you need so many IBUs, you can end up with this giant hop mass in your kettle,
right?
And it's going to soak up all that precious wort that you're working on.
More beer, the better,
right?
Right.
So that's one of the reasons you use high alpha hop for that. Reduce your hop mass. And for fermentation temp, start out around 67 Fahrenheit, 67 Fahrenheit to 19 degrees C.
Mm-hmm.
Around there, maybe a little lower, and work up to there. And then towards the end of fermentation, you're going to go to 70 Fahrenheit or 21 degrees C. You need to ramp up towards the end.
Fast little rest?
That, and also, you know, it keeps those yeast attenuating. If you want to get this down, you're going to have to really go with the warmer temp at the end. You don't want to start out there because you're going to end up with a really hot, solventy alcohol. It's important to control the temperature on this fermentation.
Is there a gravity like that you're looking at where you want to, like if you're 80% attenuated, would you start to ramp it up and or 60% attenuated, you know what I mean?
You need to channel the yeast whisperer in yourself.
Oh, I can hear the whisper.
But not the crazy voices in your head that are telling you to do strange things, John.
Yeah.
The yeast voices in your head that are telling you that the yeast are slowing down. So what I tend to do is look at it. It's going to take a couple of weeks to ferment this thing out. But usually after the first week or so, you just keep an eye on the bubble rate and the amount of croissant on top.
Mm.
And when you see that it's starting to slow down, start ramping the temperature.
Okay.
Add another degree, and it seems to be slowing down. Add another degree, get yourself up, you know, eventually to 70 degrees or 21 degrees C. And, you know, you're trying to eke out as much attenuation as you can. And when the yeast, you know, stay warmer, they're going to attenuate more.
How long would you hold it at 70 degrees?
I'd let it go, at least a week.
Okay.
So, yeah, this is going to take a couple of weeks to ferment.
Right.
And then this is one of the few beers that, yeah, you can go ahead and rack it off primary to secondary.
Okay.
Because, yeah, it'll add a little oxygen, but what's going to happen is you need this to stay with some of the yeast for quite a bit of time. So after that first couple of weeks, and when, you know, the initial, when the yeast starts falling out, you can go ahead and rack it over to a secondary container and let it set on with the remaining yeast for a while.
It wouldn't hurt, though, to leave it in a primary for 3 or 4 weeks, right?
Yeah, it'd be all right.
I mean, just let it clear up a little
bit.
Yeah,
you know, the yeast are going to be really stressed at this point,
right.
and they're
so
a lot closer to dying. Yeah, so
okay.
this is one of the cases where, yeah, you really, it's probably a good idea.
Okay.
One of the few cases I would advocate that. Hmm. But, you know, you can go for a while before you do that. And then, you know, it's going to take some time to age.
I got some questions from the chat for you.
Okay.
Have you ever done a 180-minute boil? And that's a good question. I mean, could you boil for 3 hours? Four hours?
You can. The thing is, they say that, you know, watch your hop bittering and all that.
Mm-hmm.
If you put your bittering hops in early, you want to always put your hops in at the last, you know, 60 minutes
okay.
of the boil.
So you're doing 2 hours on yours.
Right.
And so you're adding yours the last 60.
Yeah.
Okay.
So if you're going to do a 3 hour boil, wait 2 hours, then throw in the. If you do 3 hours, you're going to end up with a lot more caramelization as well, or, you know, those melanoid and caramelization type of things, especially with some of the sugars that'll caramelize at a lower temperature.
Uh huh.
And it may be too much.
Right.
I mean, 2 hours, I think, is more than enough.
Right.
And, you know, especially with this level of specialty grains.
And do you compensate for how much wort you're getting into your boil kettle because you're going to be boiling longer?
Yeah, you have to. You have okay. to adjust your initial pre-boil wort size.
Okay.
And gravity.
So you, like, end up with 8 gallons.
Yeah, you'll end up
boil
with
off
more.
Two or something.
Right, right.
2.5. Okay.
Right.
Let's see. Fermentation. The Cal Ale strain, how much is fermented out roughly from a 1.12 if you're pitch healthy?
You can get into the upper 70s in attenuation. So you can get down to, you know, 30 or a little less.
Hmm.
And the keys to it are that you have some simple fermentable sugars in there. So you got to use corn sugar, table sugar, something like that. You have to use a very low mash temperature and let it sit there for a minimum of an hour, and you might go hour and a half or 2 hours at 149 and let the enzymes break down those sugars and the starches into the simpler sugars. And then you can get some good attenuation. And again, like you're saying, John, healthy yeast, proper amount of yeast, plenty of oxygen. Some people, when they do a big beer like this,
mm-hmm.
they'll do a dose of oxygen to start, and I think you do this.
Mm-hmm.
Is you do a dose of oxygen to start, and then a few hours in, you'll add another dose of oxygen.
Until I see active fermentation, I won't do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what's happening is the yeast will suck up that oxygen really quick.
Mm-hmm.
They use it to make their cell membranes more pliable. And then because they need that, and when they replicate, they take, you know, half of their membrane, and they give it to the daughter cell, mm-hmm. or a portion of their membrane, give it to the daughter cell, and they end up with a scar and less pliable membrane, and so they need more oxygen to make the sterols, to make the membranes pliant, and do all this.
You got to take care of them, you know.
Right. So that's why you give them the oxygen
right.
to start with, and the other nutrients that they need after they've replicated a certain mm-hmm. amount. If you don't have the right amount of yeast, if you give them more oxygen, they will go ahead and reproduce some more,
mm-hmm.
given the right conditions. So that's why people do that. If you're pitch enough yeast to start with, may not be an issue.
We had talked about the mash tun. Do you want a thin or a thick mash? Especially with this type of beer, I mean.
Well, I go with a standard size, or standard thickness of 1.3.
Oh, you do 1.3 quarts per pound?
Yes.
Okay.
That's my general thing, just because it works well in a recirculating system.
That's a pretty thin mash.
Yeah, it works fairly well in a... Well, anything, you know, one is kind of thick, mm-hmm. 1:1, and two is considered thin.
Right.
It works well in my recirculating system. The thicker the mash, the more dextrinous the resulting sugars are going to be.
So your efficiency goes down?
Not necessarily, but the resulting sugars, it favors the longer chain sugars.
Okay.
With a thicker mash. However, the difference, I think, between, like, you know, going 1 quart per pound or 2 quarts per pound, the difference between the two is maybe a 5% change in the type of dextrins, mm-hmm. those type of sugars you get, the longer chain or the shorter chain. I read that somewhere. And so the difference is not huge. You can pretty much go anywhere in there, and that's all right. You know, some types will be more you'll get better efficiency, you know, certain things. Whatever your system allows, I would just go with that. Right. I wouldn't worry about that. That's not one of the factors that's really as important as all the other factors that you're dealing with.
Right. The fermentation probably more important than that.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, the mash temperature means a lot more to the fermentability than mash thickness.
As regards to fermentation, what temp are you usually aging your barley wine at? A cellar and in fermentation. We'll see, 68 degrees primary. Do you ever lager it? Or
so it'll get up to 70 degrees during the fermentation. And I'll let it sit there for a while until all the activity. You want to make sure that the diacetyl gets converted back and the acetaldehyde gets taken up and converted to alcohol, things like that. Things that the yeast need to do over time. You need to make sure that you've got enough warmth and yeast to make that happen.
So it finishes. Sure.
Right. Pardon me.
I just gave you my cold.
Yeah. I should have brought the biohazard suit.
Woohoo! Party. Biohazard suit. Do you own a biohazard suit?
No comment.
Okay.
So, after that, though, I'll go ahead and I keg it up and throw it in the fridge and I let it age in the fridge.
Now,
if you're giving the aging time, you want it to age faster, you need it to be warmer. But I would not let it age warmer than 50 degrees max. You want to keep it on the cooler side.
Mm-hmm.
Hot aging is, I don't think, a good thing for beer.
Well, what if someone bottle conditions it?
Bottle conditioning until you get it carbonated. But after that, you want to store them
cold,
50 or less.
Okay. Because cold just keeps beer stored. Preserves the lifespan of the beer anyways.
And one thing about aging and the development of the flavors and the alcohols and things like that is the variation in temperature actually plays a part in how aging occurs. And they do this in wine where, everyone's thinking, well, you know, you want this perfectly stable temperature and humidity and all this. If you get it too stable, it actually retards the aging process.
Really?
Yeah, and the development. So you want to swing, even if it's like a half a degree, up and down, up and down, up and down over time.
Right.
It actually helps with that process.
Well, I guess you wouldn't be aging if you had it perfect.
Yeah, perfectly static. So that actually helps. So a little swing in temperature is okay. I wouldn't have wild swings in temperature. You don't want to get down to like 30 and up to 60, and that really messes with a beer. Hmm. But a swinging in a small range is okay.
Okay.
Again, below 50, I think, for longer term aging. I have more patience, and I will put things in, upper 30s, low 40s, and just let it sit for a couple of years, and I'll come back to it and go,
it's perfect.
It's been a couple of years. Time to take another taste.
Yeah.
And, see how it goes.
Hmm. Do you ever use your second runnings from your mash tun at all? Or
I tend not to.
You could, though, right?
I could.
Make like a light ale or some sort?
Yeah, and anybody can. Yeah, all you do is, what they're talking about is you've run your mash out, you've done your barley wine, and all your grains are still there. You add more hot water to the mash, you can recirculate it again, and then run it out into your kettle, batch sparge, or you can even fly sparge again.
Hmm.
And that'll give you a wort of whatever gravity. There's a way to calculate what gravity it'll give you and everything after that. And pitch whatever, use whatever appropriate hops and pitch whatever. It's going to be lower gravity than the first one.
Right.
The reason I don't do it is that it's not going to be the ideal recipe for a specific beer that I want to brew. It would just be beer of,
some leftovers.
Like a weaker barley wine type of beer. Huh. And that's fine, but, I'm not brewing for alcohol's sake. I'm brewing to brew a specific
style.
Beer.
Right.
And to end up with a very unique product that, very specific to what my goals are.
Right. But if you wanted some lawnmower beer for your buddies and you made this killer barley
wine. Yeah, if it was just something to pour down Justin, I would...
That's fine.
Yeah, I'd go ahead and do it. No big deal.
What about an extract batch? I brewed one, and I used, for 5 gallons, I used 21 pounds of extract.
Holy smokes.
Yeah.
21 pounds of extract.
It was original gravity 1.12. 1-1-ish. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
But only got down to 30, though.
For this, you can replace the English pale malt with 16 pounds of, or 7 1/4 kilograms of a liquid malt extract.
How much did you do? 15?
16
pounds. 16 pounds?
Yeah. Or 7 1/4 kilograms.
That's weak. Weak.
That should get you. That should get you to that same 1.115.
Looks like we have a caller.
Uh oh. I found out we're here.
Hello.
Hey guys.
Hey.
It's Push.
Hey Push.
Hey Push. All right, I got
our
a question.
Caller.
Pushy Jack.
What's that?
We should say it's our caller.
Our one caller.
It that's true.
The one guy who calls. Yes. Yeah.
Is everyone afraid of calling into this show or something?
I guess so.
They're too busy listening to the pearls of wisdom coming at them.
So am I interrupting those pearls with little like dingleberries?
Ooh. Yes. Yes.
Okay.
What is your dingleberry for today?
I think I know the answer to this, but I think I'm going to have to hear it from you guys. 2 years ago, I brewed a barley wine, threw it on top of a WLP 001 cake, and it took off like crazy. Looked like a real good ferment, and I don't have my brewing notes in front of me here at work, but it seemed like all went really well, and I ended up bottling it with some priming sugar. And last night, in preparation for today's show, I tried one. And it is, the FG was like, it started out at 11:10, finished at 10:32, I believe. And it has no carbonation. Nothing happened in the bottle. Hmm. It just tastes flat and a little sweet.
Yeah, you know, when you do a beer like this, a lot of times you've got to repitch your yeast if you're in a bottle condition.
Because most of it's died.
Yeah, you got to get some. Because the high alcohol kills the yeast. Anything over 5% is toxic to yeast.
Yeah.
And they're so exhausted by the end of that you really need to pitch fresh yeast a lot of times. And it took a long time to ferment. You let it sit and clear before you bottled it. Hmm. So sometimes you need to do that. You need to get it warmer. You added some priming sugar, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So there were simple sugars there to use. It's just, that's part of the problem. I really don't like bottle conditioning barley wines for the simple fact that this is something you're going to age for several years. And if you want to have this 5 years down the road, the yeast that is in there, the majority of it will be dead in several years.
Well, okay. Sure.
And it's going to contribute some flavor. So a little bit of that can be interesting in the beer,
yeah.
But generally it ends up to be, because you're not filtering it and then adding a controlled amount back,
right?
It tends to be a little bit too much, I think. So that's why I like to keg them. I let them age in the keg for a year or two, and then I counter pressure fill the bottles, and
right.
You get a lot more control. But for folks who don't have that, I think you need to repitch some fresh yeast.
Mm-hmm.
You need to add a simple sugar. Don't use DME or anything like that to bottle condition.
Just corn sugar or something.
Yeah, corn sugar, table sugar is fine. And, store them warm to get those things carbonated.
So I'm guessing that the answer is toss this batch.
No.
Really?
No.
What should I do?
Do you see any yeast in the bottom at all?
Yes. The bottle that I tried last night definitely had some sludge in the bottom.
Do an experiment.
Yeah.
Heat it up to 80 degrees. Take one bottle. Swirl all that up back in suspension.
Yeah, warm it up.
Leave it at 85 degrees for 3 days.
Or a week,
right.
And then
really?
Just see how carbonated it is.
See what happens.
Okay, because I would say that the CO2 volume in there now is pretty much zero.
Yeah, do it at 80 degrees. Don't go to 85 because that really actually bogs down some yeasts.
Oh, okay.
80 is about right.
Yeah, try it.
And,
okay.
Yeah, just hold it at that temperature. You know, put it in your shorts and walk around with it for
my shorts are
for 2 weeks.
Over 80,
whoa,
my friend.
That's hot.
Is there any argument for trying to uncap them, pour them into a keg, and carbonate it, force carbonate it in a keg?
Nah, I think you end up with so much oxygen.
Yeah.
You know.
All right, boys.
But if you're going to do that, then make sure you let all the yeast kind of flock out, too.
Thanks for the call, Push.
But,
all right, guys. Thank you so much. You've given me hope.
Don't throw it away.
That wasn't our intention.
Don't throw it away.
Keep the pearls coming.
Yeah.
And I'll keep the dingleberries coming.
There you go.
All right.
Guys, see you guys.
Thanks, bud.
All right. 2007.
Okay. Well, That was a good show.
Yeah, not bad.
All right. Up next is a replay of last night's Sunday show, which was all about fermentables in your beer. And the next Jamel show in 2 weeks is on Flanders Red on the 29th of January. Mm-hmm.
The funky red stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. That'll be a good show.
See you then.
All right. Bruce Strong.
Jamil Show has been a production of the Brewing Network. Please send questions for Jamil to jamil@thebrewingnetwork.com. The Jamil Show airs live every other Monday at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Brewing Network.